Okay, before I get started today, I want to make a little announcement that I've been working on for about 2 years now. So this is my presentation, but I wanted to show you a little web page that we published today. Intel Graphics Development Group and the Open Source Technology Center are pleased to be able to announce the availability of a complete programmer's reference manual for the current generation of Intel graphics chips, the Intel 965G and 965GM. These programmer's reference manuals are about almost 1,700 pages of documentation for this hardware. It's everything you need to program the chips, all the way from mode selection through 3D graphics acceleration and media. There's nothing in this documentation. There's nothing in our current and planned graphics driver stack for Linux which does not come directly from these manuals. So we know that they're complete. So please find the URL above and click the download button and share and enjoy. I was supposed to get the PDFs in my email, but my email is not functioning as well as it should this morning, and they haven't arrived. But they're available here. Share and enjoy. Yes. Oh, by the way, these manuals are being distributed under the Creative Commons no derivative works attribution license. So you're welcome to copy them and share them with your friends, as long as you make sure that our copyright remains in place and don't change them when you republish them. So. Greg Kohartman actually gave me a wide selection of quotes. The one that I chose for the public press release is fairly tame. The first one that he suggested was actually, "It's about time." I couldn't use it because it had an expletive in between those two words. So, yeah, this has been certainly my passion for the last 2 years, is to actually see Intel able to publish documentation of this nature. It's certainly been a huge work of labor inside Intel to produce documentation of this nature. If you've seen Intel's other documentation for the CPU and other chipset documentation, you'll understand what kind of documentation that is. It's extensive examples and code examples and register definitions and theoretical discussions about how you might use the architecture, not just precisely what it does. So it's definitely sufficient to write a graphics driver, and we know because we did. Yeah. Let's get on with the talk then. Yeah. I really don't like to use the word getting us to. We've definitely wanted to be able to do this. The number one barrier, of course, was we didn't have a complete programmer's reference manual. What we have internally are design documents, and the design documents have a lot of information about potential future chipsets. They have a lot of information about how you might support a particular proprietary product. They have a lot of information that is only relevant to the production of the actual silicon and not the programming of it. So taking our internal documentation and producing a programmer's reference manual has taken about the last 6 months, just of tech writers and reviewing with the technologists and reviewing with legal people, all that kind of stuff. So we've always wanted to be able to publish these. It's a simple matter of making sure that our legal requirements are met and that your needs are met in terms of having a document which is useful to you. So we've been, as I say, we've been working on it for the last 2 years, and we've finally been able to produce a document that's useful. It's odd, the main impetus for this comes from Intel's customers who've all been asking for this. So if any of you are customers of Intel purchasing hardware and products from Intel, your voices were heard and Intel responded. You know, we do respond to our customers, and when you ask for things, we try to provide them. So thanks to everybody who asked. Oh, he's asking about how we might take the manual and provide links to external comments, so actually be able to edit the document and provide comments. Yes, that would be very useful. It might be nice to be able to provide an annotated version of these documents. The license that we're using, as I said, is a no derivative works license, so we can't have those republished. That's a fairly strong legal requirement from Intel in order to make sure that the information that's published in the documents accurately reflects what the chip does instead of and what we promise that the chip does. Oftentimes, a user will find some, optimization that isn't strictly supported by the hardware as it exists and may not work on every chip. So we like to make sure our documentation is something that we can stand behind, and we can actually promise, yes, the chip should work like this documentation. If you find that it doesn't, we'll find out why. But in terms of providing external documentation, because we're publishing this with a Creative Commons license, you can redistribute the document on your own website and provide commentary in an external document. That will make sure that the attribution is appropriate. You know, what text came from Intel and what text came from users. That would be interesting to see. We haven't done this before, so it's going to be interesting experience for everybody, I hope. Are there other questions about our documentation, please? Or can I get on with my actual technical presentation? Okay. As our fine announcer said, I'm currently working at Intel as a principal engineer for Linux graphics stuff. I spent the last 2 years taking some of the lessons that we've learned in the open source community and bringing them into the Intel graphics development process. I want to talk about what we've done and what we're planning on doing in this environment. So the first, my talk is focused in basically three parts. We have a lot of issues on the Linux desktop, and we have a lot of things we'd like to see happen. And I want to start isolating precisely what features in the current Linux desktop environment, what new features we want to do, how we want to, you know, change existing features. Essentially, I want to know how we can change the software to make the Linux desktop a happy place to be. Aside from writing credible applications and a better email client. I want to explore the current state of the world. When I go into the Linux graphics driver, I see a lot of pain and anguish, and a lot of it makes me very sad. Users come to me and complain about specific issues on the desktop. My video doesn't look smooth. My 3D graphics has missing functionality. That makes me very sad. So I want to explore the areas where we're lacking in the Linux desktop and try to find specific solutions to solve these specific technologies. And I want to find out, you know, how we take these sadnesses and which specific technologies we can apply to solve these problems. Not just listing the problems and saying, oh, I hope we can solve these. So I'm going to put together the list of solutions that we currently have and who's working on it, of course, because it's not me. I'm just, a pretty face. And sometimes not even so much that. What? Yeah, lots of faces, a big face. Okay, so here's the functionality that I think we want. And we've been working on this list for a long time. Obviously, I think everybody is pretty happy with the notion of a fully composited desktop, where you have the ability to integrate text and graphics and video in a smooth, animated, shiny way with plenty of bling, right? Everybody's played with CompIz. Everybody knows what that environment can be like. We're not quite to the ability we're not quite to the point of being able to say, okay, just turn on CompIz and life will be good yet. There's a lot of underlying functionality that's just not present yet, and so we're trying to get there. We want to make sure that when you're viewing the images on the screen, that you don't see images changing during the vertical retrace interval, so you see part of one image and part of another. We want to make sure that an application can use the full power of our API suite. If you go look at a current application, you get your choice. You either get to write a 3D application or you get to write a 2D application. Integrating those two into a single application is very difficult because the two APIs don't talk to each other. We obviously want to be able to improve the user's experience from the very start. So when you turn your computer on, you don't want to see a litany of mystic boot messages. We want to be able to have multiple users share a single computer. Oftentimes, my children want to come in and browse a couple of web pages, and I really don't want them seeing my browser history or other, you know, my current tags. It's like some of the material I see is not appropriate for small children. It's got things like Intel press releases in it. Oh, yeah. We want to be able to, we live in a dynamic environment, especially those of us with laptops, which I suspect is most everybody. You want to make sure you can plug everything in and change your environment dynamically on the fly. Another very important concern inside Intel and in fact most of the technical world right now is reducing the amount of power that we consume. In a laptop environment, it's very obvious, a very personal need to reduce power to increase your battery life and extend the number of movies you can watch on that trans-Pacific flight. But in a global sense, we certainly have a social responsibility to reduce the power consumption of the products that we produce. You know, we have a responsibility to the world to make sure that our products damage the world as little as possible. And of course, I don't think anybody would ever complain about a computer if it got faster. Another important goal that we've had in the last couple of years is to reduce the amount of code running as root. It's just not a good idea. Okay, I want to explore where we are today. A composited desktop. Well, you can... What? I'm sorry, that joke is not original with me. That comes from Jim Blinn, who's a long sequence of articles. One of them was about image composting. Okay, so in our composited desktop world, 2D is working great. The composite extension essentially solves the compositing problems for 2D applications that use the existing core and render extensions in the X server. Everything works great. Images are appeared, that you get updates appropriately when they're damaged. Overlay video, textured video is very similar to 2D video. It's painted right into the frame buffer. Redirection works. You can do textured video, and you can scale and rotate. And you can see examples of that here in this picture. Overlaid video, where we had the old ability to put a blue color into the frame buffer and have a separate piece of video memory painting the video image, that can't work in a composited environment. You can't get a projective transformation of that usually. So if we're talking about moving to a composited environment, either we have to discard overlaid video, which some video chips have actually done, including the 965. It doesn't have an overlay unit. Or we have to think about how you do overlay in a composited environment. I don't know how to do that yet. 3D today, we know how to do it. It's not hard. It's not rocket science. But not hard and a lot of work are two different things. And as you see here from this example, this lovely GLX Gears is not exactly well integrated into the desktop environment. So we got a long ways to go with, we have two significant issues to solve here with a composited desktop. Getting rid of video refresh artifacts. I wanted to show you a fairly common example here. So here's just a simple example of what image tearing looks like. See those lines? Those are not present in this application. It's painting solid rectangles, right? And in fact, the cool thing is the lines up there look different than the lines down here. So the goal, of course, is to get rid of those lines and to make it so that you see consistent images with no tearing in them. That's a bunch of work. Right now, the only API that we support that gets rid of the tearing is our 3D API. 2D applications, you're going to get tearing. We have no way of synchronizing 2D updates, the vertical retrace interval. Video applications with textured video, my number one complaint about our current driver is that our textured video doesn't eliminate tearing. When you're watching a movie and you're seeing a lot of fast action, the last thing you want to see is a big horizontal line across your screen as the video tears every frame. Not acceptable.
Okay, did you ever look at the ingredients on those?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Scary. Absolutely. It's good for you. Healthy and nutritious. Okay, what about video integration? Right now, I can't take the output of XV, your typical video acceleration architecture, I can't draw that off screen. Which, in the face of the composite extension, is patently ridiculous because obviously I can. It's just our current APIs don't let me do it. It's like there's a big test. If you're not drawing to a window, return failure. Great. Video still sometimes uses overlays. If you look at the i830 and i855 drivers, we don't support textured video there. So if you have a laptop without an i915 or later chipset in it, you're not going to get a composited desktop because we don't have textured video support there yet. 3D today can't draw to and from X pixmap. So if you're drawing a GL application and you want to do some 2D drawing at the same time, they can't talk about the same off-screen object. They don't share the same namespace. Similarly, 2D can't talk about 3D textures. So if you want to take a 2D application and import some 3D drawing or have a 2D application prepare a texture for 3D drawing, like say in CompIz, where the 2D application is constructing rendering its image, which needs to be used as a texture to paint it on the screen, we can't draw there right now. We actually end up copying the pixels from pixmaps to textures with an app, on the app, from the application side. Tremendous performance problem. Flicker-free booting. Right now, we kind of had a Las Vegas effect. Lots of flashing lights. I counted Eric's laptop last night to see how many times the screen flashed when you booted. The first thing we saw was the hardware boot logo. And then it flipped to the grub screen, which was a mode set. So you got black screen, flashy, flashy, vertical retrace lines across the screen. Then we got another mode switch as it switched to the kernel messages, and they started scrolling off the screen. And in the middle of that, the kernel changes the font. So it goes, you know, all of a sudden it's scrolling, 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 twinge, scrolling, scrolling, scrolling. It's very disturbing. Then the entire screen goes black. And then the backlight goes off. And then the backlight comes back on, and we got, I don't think we saw the root weave. We got rid of that. And then it flashes to a solid color, and then and only then does it flash to the GDM login. You know, we had these poor users. It's like, what is my computer doing? It must be exploding. That's not okay. Okay, we want the ability to use the computer with multiple users at the same time. You know, we have this ability today. I can start up another X server like this, right? I can say, but watch what happens. Black?
Yay.
Lots of blackness, and my machine, oh, there we go. Root weave. Wasn't that cool? Oh, that's the projector figuring it out. But the projector is auto-adjusting because I turned it off. And yet, it's running the same mode now. You know, why did I have to turn it off? That's crazy. Okay, is it going to come back? That was untested. Okay, worse than that. I mean, VT switch is bad. VT switch is hideous. Worse than that, only one of those sessions gets direct rendered graphics. So next year, when I decide that I'm not going to support non-direct rendered graphics for 2D, all of a sudden, this limitation to only one person gets DRM is going to become pretty painful, because that means you can only run one X server. Not okay. Hot plug everywhere. Obviously, we want to be able to support this. Video output switching finally works. You know, we have ATI, we have NV, and we have Intel drivers all supporting video output switching dynamically and on the fly. We still have a tremendous limitation. We can't resize the frame buffer. If you've ever noticed, I think somebody complained this morning, just before my talk started, that they couldn't get their windows to be side by side because of some random limitation. That's crazy. It's just a frame buffer. Reallocate it, you know. We can't do that today. That's not okay. The other limitation right now is we can only have one frame buffer per graphics processor, which means that each GPU, so in this case my integrated graphics, 965 integrated graphics, can only draw to one frame buffer at a time. So in a chipset like a 915, where the maximum frame buffer size is 2K by 2K, it means you cannot put your 1280 laptop next to your 1600 external VGA monitor. The chipset can't drive it. The solution is fairly easy, you know, multiple frame buffers. Okay, the other thing we want to do is reduce power consumption. Saves battery, is good for the world. Right now, Jesse has added frame buffer compression to the Intel driver. It saves a half a watt. It seems, you know, not so great, but that's about 10% of the power of the chip through a simple turning on of an Intel, totally transparent to the application except when it breaks. Realize that it is on in the driver, and when you see Technicolor stripes, like somebody, you know, somebody did something bad on your monitor, you'll know what's causing it at least, and you'll understand that it's saving you a half a watt when it's working correctly. And please file a bug, because usually it's fairly easy to fix. Another interesting problem right now is that the 2D graphics acceleration code spins on the CPU. The CPU is never idle when you're drawing 2D graphics. That example I showed you of drawing a solid rectangle, would you think that would be fairly graphics processor intensive? Seem like painting, you know, XORing or drawing a 500 by 500 rectangle, 250,000 pixels as fast as you can. Would you think that might be limited by the GPU? What is? The GPU is busy. So is CPU. And what's it doing? It's waiting for the GPU in its spin loop. Yay! Another thing right now is that there, our 3D acceleration architecture has a fairly primitive compiler. How many of you have used the KNRC compiler from, you know, version 7 Unix? Yeah, there's old hands. Okay, if you've ever looked inside that compiler without the people optimizer, without the separate program that was people optimizer, that's very similar to the technology that we have today for compiling shader programs. Very straightforward. You see the shader program, you emit the obvious instructions. So if the shader program isn't tuned for your particular machine and hasn't had all the instructions reordered, and you know, you make sure you use the branch not less than zero in a do while loop so that you get that special instruction on the PDP-11 that goes fast. Yeah, all that kind of crazy source level hacks we used to do, and now we leave to the compiler. That's the era that we're in for GLSL compilation right now. It's not a bad place to be. We have full support for GLSL, and most programs run fast enough. But when GLSL programs start to get bigger, that's going to start to become a significant performance problem. Another really big issue right now is that doing video playback, the only thing we're doing with the GPU is the YUV color space conversion. So you get an image in YUV format, and we do the color space conversion to RGB, and then we scale it to fit the screen, or however big your video window is. So we're doing two very CPU-intensive operations with the GPU. It's a tremendous advantage. If you've ever done media playback without the XD extension, you'll know that your CPU gets a lot more battery life using it. We aren't using any of the rest of the GPU. The GPU can take a bit stream from your DVD and play it as a movie in hardware. We're not using most of that hardware. Yeah, that would be in those documents that I published. Yeah, let me know if you don't have enough docs. Yeah.
Is that just with taking bits off the DVD, does that mean that the hardware is all the ending, you think?
Yeah, all the motion compensation, all the IDCT, all the variable length decode, yes. Yeah.
Only in the branch.
No, the hardware can do it. Our software doesn't do any of it. Well, that's true. I'll talk about that in a while. We need to. So how do we make it faster? What are our current performance limits? Ajax was presenting a bunch of performance information at a XTalk yesterday, and was showing exactly where we were melting the system with waiting for stuff. And the two top offenders were rendering text and filling polygons. Those are both operations that are in the new render extension. And both of those are entirely software in most graphics architectures today. We have some render acceleration for 965 and 915 that helps a phenomenal amount. Our 965 stuff needs to go a little faster. A couple months ago, when Carl Wirth started on this work, it started at about 700 glyphs per second, which is not quite fast enough. And we need to improve our GLSL compilers, I said. In the security space, we're very conscientious in Xorg right now about making sure that we track and resolve security issues inside the X server really quickly and very responsibly. Why is that? Because we have, you know, several hundred thousand lines of code from a project that's existed for 20 years that runs as root on your machine. And worse than that, it not only runs as root, it maps hardware into user space, hardware that is very easy to damage your machine with because it has a DMA engine in it. It also maps every I/O port on your machine into the application's address space. So if you have any, even mistakes about storing data to the wrong place in a buffer overrun problem, or executing a wrong sequence of instructions and sending bits to your hard disk controller, to its I/O ports, this is a catastrophic problem. And why do we do this? We do this because the original Unixes that X was ported to, the System 5 Unixes like SCO Linux and, SCO Unix. Man, it's getting bad. And the System 5 and System 3 variants that ran on 3D6 back in the day, you couldn't add kernel drivers to those. So as X was ported to those environments, all of the stuff which used to be in kernel mode was sucked up into user mode because the only thing they could do was write the code in user mode. And you know, a necessity 20 years ago when this work started. But because we've had the ability to actually write kernel drivers for since about 1992 for Linux, we haven't needed to do that. But we haven't ever figured out a good architecture, built the appropriate architecture to eliminate this problem. This laptop actually crashed because the cat slept on the keyboard and overheated it. And so X was running, but not now.
But the hardware vendors probably didn't want to change because they wanted to run the same graphics drivers with the same X server on different OS versions, Unix flavors, AIX,
no, and in fact, HPUX and AIX and IRIX, none of them use this model. All of them have kernel mode drivers for their graphics chips. So it is the x86 Unixes, Linux, and other free versions of the world which are using this user mode. So, you know, what used to be real Unix computers never did this, and now we're to the point where we own the world in terms of POSIX, or Linux-compatible systems, as I like to say. You know, now that we are running the place, we need to fix. We need to go in and clean up the world. So that's our responsibility now. Okay, so we have all these problems. How are we going to get to where we want to go? It's not too hard. We actually have solutions for most of them. For compositing 3D applications, it's fairly straightforward. Right now, it's great. All of your 3D applications share a single back buffer, which is to say when the 3D applications are drawing, they're not drawing on the screen, they're double buffered. But normally you'd think of the back buffer as being some, you know, external memory where your application is painting, then it's copied onto the screen. Well, kind of, except that it's exactly the same size as your main front buffer, your frame buffer, and all of the same clipping occurs. So when you render your 3D application to its back buffer, it gets clipped to precisely the same geometry as the window that's showing, the window that's going to show the contents. Well, if you want to do compositing, we don't do clipping anymore. The clipping of the front buffer window is not relevant in a composited environment. Because a compositing manager wants to be able to do things like, you know, make little thumbnails of that application, or it wants to be able to spin it around a cube. So all of a sudden we need to be able to take the entire content of that application and render its output. So we need to get rid of the shared depth and back buffers. These were implemented for the reason that we have shared depth and back buffers is very sensible. When you have a graphics card that has precisely 4 megabytes of video memory, you have barely enough space to have a 16-bit front buffer and a 16-bit back buffer, right? So if you want to have multiple applications on the screen simultaneously, there's no way you can dynamically allocate back buffers for them. You'll never have enough memory. So a good idea when it was originally done, it's long since time. How many of you have a 4-meg video card?
The QEMU
one has 4. The QEMU, okay. So if you're running Elgest and you want to run GL in your Elgest environment, yeah, this particular graphics chip in here can map 1 gigabyte of memory into its address space, so which seems, you know, sufficient. It's not. Yeah, seems sufficient. So we already have a demo of this. Christian Hogsberg has a demonstration of what this is going to look like. It's in the DRI2 branch. So, solution. Not done yet. As I said, it's a demo. Synchronizing to retrace for 2D applications. So DRM applications work great. You know, they have all the nice GL primitives, and the DRM extension provides suitable primitives to do all the synchronization you might need to do. For 2D, we've had this extension that we've talked about called the sync extension that's supposed to solve all these problems, and yet nobody's done it. I'm not sure it's the right extension, but we haven't even tried. It would be nice to actually give it a try and see if it's what we want. What? Thank you. I'm almost done. Video applications need to use our kernel mode buffer swapping stuff, which can happen at a vertical retrace interval. So you can actually present video images synchronized to the retrace. We don't have any people doing any work in this area. So if you have an interest in solving these problems, I have some documentation for you. And the documentation is not necessary because all the kernel primitives exist for doing what we need. We just haven't done it. What about integrating drawing APIs? Video, we need to abandon overlays. I don't know how to make them work in a composited environment. It's very hard to get a translucent overlay. And we need to, I think we need to delete two lines of code so that XV put image will actually draw to a pixmap. As far as I know, that's all we need to do. I'll give it a try. I was looking at the code last night. It's like, oh, that's all that is broken? It just says no? It doesn't actually have any reason for failure. For 3D, we have a bunch of new extensions to GL, and we have some new extensions to the X server where they can talk about each other's objects. We have a texture from Pixmap, which is a great extension that allows you to talk about a Pixmap in terms of GL. I'm hoping to be able to add to the GLX extension the ability to talk about a texture as a Pixmap. All the underlying driver infrastructure is in place. We know how to do it. I think it's a matter of some extension specification and some a little bit of coding. Yep.
Does that mean you can go to tiled layout
of Pixmaps also in your
shadow?
Are we going to tiled layout of Pixmaps in shadow in system memory? Now understand that on the Intel graphics chip there is no such thing as graphics memory. All memory is graphics memory. Every page is within video control in my world. That's one of the advantages of TTM. I can map every page into the system dynamically into the graphics accelerator and draw to all of them. So yes, I expect to use tiled Pixmaps. They're tremendously faster. Although it sucks to be software then. We have some solutions, but you know, we have suitable hardware that makes this all work. What?
Speak for yourself.
I'm talking about Intel here. Intel is winning. Intel's hardware is... It's integrated graphics, and as such, it does have some memory bandwidth issues. But because it's integrated graphics, okay, it's 16 times slower. But as as integrated graphics, it has this phenomenal advantage that there's some unification of system architecture that gives it amazing expressive power. It's fun to play in. It's like, okay, we accept the reality of integrated graphics memory bandwidth and embrace the reality of integrated memory in terms of unification of functionality. Okay, well, we have a TTM 2D driver on a branch. Eric and Carl have been hacking on that a bunch. We have some interesting numbers. I'm hoping that we'll get a lot better in the coming months. So I'm thinking this is going to happen pretty soon. Flickr Free Boot. We've had some demonstrations of what this looks like. Jesse has been working on mode setting in the kernel that will allow us to do mode setting when the system comes up to a graphical mode. And then you can run some kind of DRM-based console so that you can actually present text in the graphics mode. And then when you transition to the X server, you can do a nice fade or whatever you want. You know, you render all your stuff and fade in the X server. That'd be cool.
Don't forget panics on the cube.
Panics on the cube. Yeah, actually, I was at the professional delegates networking session last night, and I was looking and chatting with somebody. I was like, oh, yeah, I have a Windows system I could put into the kernel. And then we could do VT switch on a cube. It'd be great. All I have to do is have spinning VTs, and you'll be there. Yeah. The big question here is how do we set the right mode at startup? You know, where's the configuration information for my multi-monitor layout going to live? I don't know.
BIOS?
The BIOS. Yeah, the BIOS has always been such a wealth of useful information for us. Yeah.
It's just going to go in initially.
Yeah.
So Rob's got this thing, he has this picture called Save Default, where you can put the menu on a small bit of bytes on this somewhere, but it just matches the load.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think it's an insolvable problem, but we don't have a proposed solution yet.
Yeah,
it's clearly an init. It could be an init RAMFS problem. It could be I don't know. We'll see.
It's an init RAMFS.
Yeah.
It'll work. I'm not handling it.
Yeah, he's not. Yeah, Early D says it will be in the init RAMFS for at least for Fedora, and Debian will do something different probably. It's a world of Debian pain. The DRM mode setting stuff is on a branch. If you're running a master version of the DRM driver, you have a big piece of that right now. Our DRM driver for Intel chips actually saves and restores your video mode, so you get reliable S3 for your video hardware now. Yay! Finally. Let's see, fast user switching. The big limitation right now is that only the single X server is the DRM master. You can't have multiple DRM masters. What a pain. Although somebody has some proposals, and there is some software for how this is going to work. There's some Somebody said there was code in Fedora?
Not fully in yet. I have it working on
Mercury. It works on Airly D's laptop.
Why did you say laptop?
Computer at work. Check. Okay. So we're hoping to see some patches here. Two versions of Gears run. Now everybody knows that's an important benchmark and sample application for 3D because it exercises so much of the stat. It is almost universally the first application we run when we've done some huge GL hack, and it's like, ooh, Gears works.
No, almost exclusively.
Yeah. And then it's like, so we ship the driver, and it's like, oh, by the way, texturing, that doesn't work. Oops. Okay. A textured version of Gears. There we go. That's stepping out. I'm not sure that's going to make it. Okay, so resizing the frame buffer. One of the keys to resizing the frame buffer is to move to our new acceleration architecture. I could talk for hours about that, but I'm not going to. We need to finish the TTM transition and get rid of our legacy 3D application and DRM infrastructure. We cannot support old DRM clients and resize the frame buffer. So we need to make sure we have a complete transition so that our performance and capabilities in the TTM DRM environment are sufficient. And then we can get to a resizable frame buffer. Eric says this is necessary. I believed him.
DRI 3D library.
Not
apps.
No. Well, DRI 3D. Yeah, of course. Your GL apps will still work. But your libraries, GL, the TTM GL stuff right now is dicey on 9.6.5. Is it crashing this morning?
No, but there's the light.
Excellent. Yeah, we're typing as fast as we can. Ajax is working on changes inside the X server to support multiple frame buffers from a single GPU. It turns out this is a whole lot easier than supporting multiple GPUs. And it eliminates almost all of the horrible performance problems of classic Cinerama. So it's worth doing. That's separate. Shatter is a layer inside below this level that gives us multiple frame buffers on a single GPU. Now we also want to support multiple GPUs so we can have larger environments. But talking about a single GPU environment, we want to support this. It's enough of a special case beyond the existing Cinerama code that it's worth doing. Right. Exactly. Yeah. That's why I have four elements here, and that's why Ajax says it's, we're waiting. Start typing. Can you get out of your RHEL nightmare and go do useful work? I don't use RHEL, by the way. Yeah. Your work on RHEL is not of use to me. Okay, I got about another minute. I got about two more slides. Lower power. Here's how we're getting to lower power. Getting rid of the spinning on 2D apps is really simple. You block. I know it's a novel concept. We need to extend XVMC to non-MPEG formats. Right now, XVMC only does MPEG. It can't do H.264. It can't do VC1. So we need to extend this extension to support these new video formats. Because one of the key reasons you want to do this is not for standard definition television, which is pretty usable today. You really need to do this for HD content, where you're talking about 8 times the data rate. Eight times the data rate from a system which is currently using 20% of your machine is using 160% of your machine.
Intel sells multi-core.
Yeah. The current software stack uses one of those. Jay Barnes is hacking on some more LVDS power saving stuff, so we should see laptop power saving improving. Engineer in China, Zenyu, is working on XVMCs for 915 and 965. That's on a branch. You can go play with that. And Airly D and Carl and Eric are working on DRM 2D drivers, and those are available on a branch. So we're hoping to land those pretty soon. Faster. Obviously, one of the main things we need to do is make sure that all of our render extension stuff goes really fast. The 915 render acceleration is working quite well right now for compositing. We have not even started to think about render acceleration for trapezoids, other than hand-waving and saying, surely a fragment shader can solve this problem for us. And the fairies will come and dust it with pixie dust. I hope it works. And so we should have something going a lot nicer on 965 fairly shortly. 915 is amazingly fast now. It's actually working quite nicely. Security, kernel mode, mode setting. DRM does all of our 2D driving. All of a sudden, I don't need to map registers into my X server. So my X server can run as nobody. We have demos running. Do you actually have the X server running as unprivileged yet?
No, it's not even working.
Yeah, AirlyD says not quite ready yet.
Tomorrow for open day? I think you're good because I'm flying in the morning. So I'll say yeah.
Okay, so that's the end of my presentation. If I have questions and comments.
Can you hear me now? Yay! Okay, if you want to ask a question, put your hand up so I can get the mic to you.
Stunned in
this
silence.
This means ask questions, people.
I left time. They just want more ice cream.
Some of those limitations you mentioned, like that 2K limit on the 915,
yep.
Since I have one of those in my laptop, is that something? Is that a hardware limitation, or is that just a software stack at the, or the driver at the moment limiting it?
Oh, if it was a software limitation, it wouldn't be a limitation for long. No, the 3D engine on the 915 and 945 generation of chips only has 11 bits of addressing. It's like one more would have been really nice. You know, 4096 is so much better than 2048, but it can't go more than 2048 wide and tall. Just 11 bits of addressing in the hardware. Yeah. Other questions, comments? Are we ready for ice cream?
Are you by?
No. I'm giving away documentation. Okay, thanks for coming today. Have a good rest of LCA.